Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome into 11 Personnel. Here at SEC Media Days 2021, I'm Nick Roush, joined for the first time in Birmingham, in Hoover, by Adam Luckett. Adam, have all of your dreams come true?
Here's my biggest takeaway from today. You've always told me, like, this is a meat grinder. Like, you're going to be exhausted by the end. And I was like, okay, Roush, I've worked a real job before. I know what tired is. And I'll tell you what, I'm pretty damn tired right now. And I didn't get up from my chair. Maybe I got up to get coffee and grabbed a little Chick-fil-A for lunch. But, man, I severely underestimated the fatigue that it was going to go through. But, man,
I did tell you it was going to be cold, though. Right? Mm-hmm. I warned you. I had to get up at one point because my toes were falling asleep. They were getting like tingly, you know, like when you've been out sledding for too long and you got to go inside. I had to walk around a little bit, but it was a busy first day. A little bit of a late start. You know, Greg Sankey didn't talk till 12:30. But once we were off and rolling, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you became a star out there. Just grabbing the mic from everybody. Just stealing it left and right.
Shane Beamer didn't love my scheme. Questions, but that's okay. It's not for everyone. Coach O did get some good answers from him and LSU starting right tackle Austin Deculus on Darryl Rosenthal. But yeah, it felt good. It's not the prettiest room in there. So getting on TV, I don't look too bad compared to some of the other cats. So it makes you feel good. But yeah, it was a fun time. And we were only in there for what, 5 hours, but it felt like a lot longer.
Yeah, no, wait till Wednesday. But let's start in reverse chronological order. That's what's freshest on our mind. And the first thing on my mind, besides the Bud Lights next to us, are these fancy water bottles that they got. So they did change the drink setup this year, Luckett. It used to be just like a fountain tap of Dr. Pepper. I'm assuming because of COVID, they changed that. And now we have like a chest of Dr. Pepper varieties. Very much looking forward to trying out those Dr. Peppers with you. Cream soda, cherry. I mean, they had any kind of Dr. Pepper you can imagine. That's for later in the week. And now we've got these Core hydration bottles. And it just, it's the fanciest looking water bottle I've ever seen in my life.
It looks like something off Back to the Future.
It really does. Like, they're...
When I saw people drinking these today, I thought they were like Rick Pitino vitamin water. So I'm like, why are all these people drinking these? No, where's the water
bottle?
It's
just regular water.
It's pretty good water. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, it's fine, but it ain't got nothing on our friends from Sword Performance. The Shield, best Sword Performance, it's outstanding. It's keeping us hydrated throughout the week because whatever this crap is, can't hold the tea to our friends from Shield at Sword Performance, who is sponsoring a lot of this week's activities. So check them out at drinksword.com. But Shane Beamer, he was the last guy up. And Luckett, he said maybe 1,000 words a minute and none of them said anything. It was actually, of all the filibustering I've seen in my years at ACC Media Days, I've never been quite so impressed as somebody that can say so much and also so little at the same time.
We've all gone to high school or hung out with a Shane Beamer. Just a schmoozer, knows how to talk, knows how to hit the talking points to make people feel good about themselves.
Oh, and he hits them too. He was like, the tight ends are going to get the ball. Like, I mean, he was real. He would like, it was almost like Dwight Schrute pounding,
right?
You know, on the podium. I mean, he really hit like 2 or 3 points, even though I didn't believe any of the baloney coming out of his mouth.
He giving Peter Burns and Chris Doering shout outs. He's talking about South Carolina's the greatest job in the country.
I used to watch SEC Network at Oklahoma. Like, yeah. Like,
get out of here, Shane. Oh, you didn't.
The best line, the one that was really just like, come on, buddy, was when he said that I've been told that there's never been more excitement for South Carolina football ever. Buddy, do you know who used to coach here?
Yeah.
Like five, years ago?
Do you not remember, like, 8 years ago, they were, like, 33-7 over 3 years?
And had Steve Spurrier as the coach. Like, Shane, like, calm the hell down, buddy. But you know what? I give him credit for at least injecting some juice into a bad team. But I got to say, I'm sensing a theme here with these hires over at South Carolina. They just like good media people.
Yeah, Ray Tanner definitely falls for that, their athletic director. That's yeah. for sure.
Hook, line, and sinker, Muschamp, and now Beamer. Like, these are guys who just are great at kissing all kinds of butt, yeah. and that's what they've done.
With Beamer, he's just very good in the PR aspect of this job, you can already tell. He knows the right points to hit. Like, today I asked him kind of what I thought was a fair question and something he could have kind of expanded on, and he wasn't going to touch it.
No.
It was basically the league in general and kind of like college football, like a trend is developing with hiring offensive coordinators from the NFL. So I'm trying to figure out like why is that happening? And I even said, Beamer, you did it, Kentucky did it, LSU and Alabama has done it, and he just wouldn't touch it. But even then, he propped up Marcus Satterfield 5 or 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
But when I asked this question, I didn't really realize this. The only reason Satterfield's there is because Mike Bobo dipped on him to go to Auburn. So he wasn't even their first choice. So I think that's probably what he was thinking, I guess, there. But, yeah, I mean, he just did a very good job of selling his program. But at the same time, he had some quotes in there that were interesting. Like, he's, like, really young at quarterback, and that's just how it is, which doesn't sound great. But he made sure to prop up line of scrimmage, offensive line, defensive line, and then their running back position. But other than that, they're really struggling. Like, receivers, he's like, we got to have some guys step up.
A lot of them. And then
he mentioned how they lost a lot of guys to the transfer portal and early entry NFL guys in the back seven. And that's really what their concern is heading into this season. So, like, recruiting had a big part of that, of mm-hmm. his speech. I mean, that was a lot of what he was talking about. And the sign from that should be they probably know it's not going to be a great year. You got Clemson in the non-conference. You got a weird road game at East Carolina in your second game. That screams kind of upset right there. And then you got the SEC slate at Georgia, or Georgia at home, get Kentucky at home, and then, you know, whoever else they play. But for him, it's all about recruiting and building to the future right now. And I think he checked those boxes. And I think if you're a South Carolina person, you're probably pretty happy with what you heard on Monday afternoon.
Yeah, especially we talk about how they play through the media. I will commend him for using the platform to, like, I mean, he didn't call out that 4-star tight end by name, but he basically did everything he could to call out. And I don't even know the kid's name, but he's from South Carolina, correct?
He lives in Georgia. Oscar Delp. He's a top 100 talent.
Yeah.
Georgia, Clemson, South Carolina, that's kind of the recruiting battle right now. That's like their big fish, their version of Keontae Goodwin, I would say, in this 2022 class. They're really trying to get him because that would help them make a pretty big splash, obviously, if you beat Clemson and you beat Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
The two schools your fan base dislikes the most for a big kid like that, that's kind of where they're at right now.
Remember when South Carolina beat Georgia at Georgia 2 years ago? What a weird... God.
That's an oral history game. Like, we talk about this a lot. Like, that game, there was Jake Fromm interceptions. They had the Kerryon Joyner at quarterback. South Carolina only averaged like 3.6 yards per play.
So, and they won.
They won the game.
Was it block punt?
Well, there was a pick six. Israel Mukamu had like a pick six, and then another one that set up a score. It was a nooner down there at Sanford Stadium.
Might even be a noon SEC network, if I'm not mistaken. Like, it was a very just, man, what a bizarre game.
Oh, entering that Saturday, it was like, this gets maybe the third screen at my house. Maybe.
then South Carolina. Like,
and then it just became two defensive coordinators just butting heads in game management situations. Mm-hmm. And a hot rod missed the kick to win the game. I think he missed like two kicks that game. It was just a very weird game. Fromm had 3 interceptions. He only threw like 8 his whole career at Georgia. It was just a very odd game.
Man, your wife cried too. Jake Fromm.
Yeah, she did. She does love her some Jake Fromm, no doubt
about that. But it was also kind of, this was later on in the day, but when we got to hear from some of the players, the setup is different because of COVID. Instead of having three players each in different corners of the room, and you can just kind of go up and talk to them. They're bringing the players one at a time to the podium. There's only two of them, and it's so much more awkward because instead of being at a table in a corner and speaking to, I don't know, 10 people gathered around in a huddle, you're speaking to a ballroom with 100 people in an SEC Network set in the back. And, oh yeah, the SEC Network set, they're just doing their SEC Network thing. They're not stopping to hear you talk. They're still mucking it up and, you know.
Yeah, when the players are up there, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I felt bad for some of the guys, you know, who just were obviously a little rattled by it all. I have a feeling Josh Pascal is going to handle the room well. He's a guy, but he's also not a guy too to take a bad question and just run with it for 2 minutes. He's not a Shane Beamer that's just going to keep on talking and talking. And I think it was funny that like every one of South Carolina's kids got asked about Frank Beamer when Frank Beamer's heyday. They were what?
I don't know.
Knee high to a grasshopper.
They were not born when, let's say,
Mike Vick. They were born.
Yeah, or, was that 99, wasn't it? Yeah, it was 99. That was Florida State's or one of their last championships before Jimbo won it in 2013.
Yeah, Chris Winkie, yeah.
Yeah, that was that 1999. It's 2021.
Miles Brennan, I looked it up. He was born in 99. So,
yeah, so you're right on that verge.
Not even being born when Beamer was really rock and roll.
Right. I mean, I was little when that happened.
Yeah. So you had a little bit of awkward moments. I do see a little bit of Beamer in... You know, he definitely kind of has the look of his dad.
He has the pedigree.
Yeah.
The coordinator hires were weird. He's recruiting well. Like, they're going to have a top 25 class, legit top 25 class this year, more than likely. So they're passing the checkpoints, but Muschamp was recruiting at a top 20 level at South Carolina. I was waiting for that tape today that he's upgraded the recruiting. That hasn't happened yet.
Right, right.
The development at Muschamp, and specifically the offensive ineptitude, was what doomed his... Right. Like, that guy can go out and get ball players. But Beamer's hitting all the right notes so far. And we'll see what happens when they get on the field. Because we've seen South Carolina fans, when they get on the field, they can tend to overreact, or they have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
See if they have any patience with Beamer. I think he set it up to – he didn't really come out and say, like, this is a foundation year or whatnot. But I think he kind of set the groundwork for that in general because – that they just have some holes this season.
Speaking of coordinator hires, Coach O was up today, and the two big talking points with LSU that are on the field related are, did he hire the right coordinators, and who is going to be his quarterbacks? And I spoke with Peter Burns today. We're going to have an ongoing series throughout the week at KSR where we're four questions with some familiar faces you've seen in the media plenty of times, kind of, you know, just get some opinions from outside of the Kentucky realm, see their perspective. He thinks it's going to be Max Johnson, the lefty, Brad Johnson's kid, who really gave him a nice little boost of, you know, he saved their season. He saved their season in that game down in Florida and gave fans a reason to be optimistic going into this fall. But Miles Brennan did have some crazy stupid numbers.
Yeah.
When he got hurt.
He did. They were moving the ball through the air before he got hurt last year.
Right. So now we're at a – Coach O, you know, he wasn't going to tip his hat. He said, I think we got two championship quarterbacks out there. But something's got to give. Something's got to give. I don't know who it's going to be, but for just pun's sake, I hope it's Max Johnson because, man, the T-shirt sales that dude could do in the nil era – who's ready for some Max Johnson? I'm going to give you the Max Johnson. I mean, my goodness, just the potential is limitless.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a big portal splash eventually. One of those guys is going to go into the portal.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
So that's the big thing. LSU, to me, it was the coordinators with Orgeron. He got asked about the Title IX lawsuit by Pete Thamel.
Oh, man.
He shut that down.
Goodness gracious.
Without a breath.
It was also one of those things, too, so you're asked to stand up. And, you know, Pete Thamel, he ain't got a time to stand up. Cecil Hurt from the Tuscaloosa News or whatever he's at, he can stay sitting down. He had a crutch, by God. Cecil Hurt was hurting. But Pete Thamel tried to stay seated when he asked him about the Title IX stuff. It was, I know you can't comment on ongoing litigation, but what have you done in your program to change? Like, he tried to give like a different spin on things.
Yeah.
But then
Poe cannot wait for him to finish asking the question.
Oh, I'm not talking about that.
But then thanks for asking.
Yeah, yeah. But really, a lot of it came down to, like you said, the coordinator hires. I guess I didn't realize the ripple effect of Matt Rhule going to Carolina. That took both of LSU's coordinators. He hires Joe Brady to be the offensive coordinator, and in his vacancy, Dave Aranda moves to Baylor. Really, ripple effect. Like, I don't know how I hadn't put the two to two together.
Yeah.
But, so now, Coach O is partying like it's 2019. He's bringing in a couple of Joe Brady's assistants from the Panthers staff to try to get some of that mojo back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the selling point. I don't know how much I'm buying it. But the other selling point was like, well, we got all of our guys back in the trenches. So we at least have a good up front, and now we got the right coordinator hired. The defensive coordinator they hired to replace Pelini, who was a disaster, was from Mike Zimmer's staff in Minnesota. So we kept it NFL. Durante Jones, I believe is his name?
Yes, correct.
So they're keeping it NFL, and even though he's only 2 years removed from a national championship, there is a, like, Mark Stoops, we're pressing the reset button thing. But in this case, it's almost a total reset. Because they also had to go get an offensive line coach from Arkansas. Like, it really is a complete overhaul.
It's a mess.
Nick Saban's
it's extent. A mess.
Yeah.
It's a big year for Orgeron for a lot of reasons. The Title IX lawsuit looms large. They've got this think tank going on at offensive coordinator between DJ Mangus, who's serving as the passing game coordinator, and then Jake Peets is the offensive coordinator going to call the plays, both from the Panthers, like you said. So was Marcus Satterfield, South Carolina's new OC. They had a defensive coordinator search. They lost out on the Marcus Freeman sweepstakes, Cincinnati's DC.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to Notre Dame instead of LSU. So they kind of had to settle there for some coordinator hires. So that makes you worry a little bit, a school like LSU, that you have to do that. It's a really big year for them. They open at UCLA. It's going to be a big game. You know, if that's it's a pretty big litmus test to me. Like, if LSU's legit top 10 good,
they should be able to.
They're going
to
go up there and they're going to win 42-24.
Yeah, give up DTR and have a couple big plays.
Right, UCLA have a big play. They may have a turnover too, but they physically they'll just wear UCLA out over
should
60
be able
minutes.
To. Yeah.
If they're not, if they get upset or it's a close game, that gives you cause for concern. And from Kentucky's point of view, you want to see the latter. If it's the first one, then you're looking like a top 10 team. They're just going to be tough to beat. They're probably going 9-3 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If not, they could be right for some upsets this season. And that's really what Kentucky's looking at.
Ripe for some upsets, eh? Don't you say? The Kentucky LSU connection, though, very evident. You alluded to it earlier, but you got some tasty quotes from Orgeron and Austin Deculus about Dare Rosenthal, which, man, yeah, they're so. Can we just be candid for a little bit here? We don't have to, like, beat around the bush, do we? We can just be honest with our listeners here on the Love You Person Now. So, there were two questions asked today by a Baton Rouge reporter. He asked Greg Sankey, literally read it from his, he was a TV reporter. He literally read it from his note card.
Yeah,
and then he asked the same thing to Ed Orgeron. Should there be a uniform drug policy in the SEC? Because some feel that it's not fair. And when he says some feel that it's not fair, it's LSU football fans and a prominent alum, Sadiq Charles, who is a starter for the Washington football team. Dare Rosenthal is obviously a very popular – he's really well-liked.
Yeah, I was even surprised by that today.
I mean, Deculus said he's basically a brother. He's my best friend. That guy's a dog. He's going to be one of the best out there. Coach O, same thing.
Coach O said, I recruited him myself out of Faraday High School.
Yeah, and that's like a very, like, they really like Dare Rosenthal. But Dare Rosenthal probably likes to smoke a doobie every once in a while.
Yeah.
Like, we can read between the lines here.
That's what's floating around that whole situation.
Yes, and essentially, we have a scenario here where guy fails, a drug test, and then all of a sudden he can't work his way out of that. Like, he's stuck behind an eight ball. And the people at LSU are not happy about it. And you know what? I'm happy about it because Kentucky seems to really be reaping the rewards here. I've never seen that like that with a transfer anywhere, where they're just this speak this glowingly about a guy
outside Jalen Hurts. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. I mean, it really. Yeah. That's like the one exception, and you know, I think that speaks. It's good for Kentucky.
Yeah, it keeps that pipeline open.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also one of those things, too, that I think it's kind of silly that we're in a day and age where we're also kind of having to talk around it now. But it's like the same thing that happened with the track star out at the Olympics. It's right. Like, that happened in Oregon. You can walk down the street with a cigars just rolling around everywhere, and nobody cares. But you can't run a track meet after smoking pot out there. So it's a weird double standard we still have out there. And at LSU, you could tell that they're being as vocal about it without being vocal about it as possible.
LSU's a mess right now. They've got a bunch of stuff going on there. I mean, this is a we're talking football, but like there's the Will Wade basketball stuff. The baseball coach got fired. Mm-hmm. They just hired Kim Mulkey, who comes with some baggage.
God, yeah.
I mean, there's just a lot going on in BR right now. So in this, whatever's going on with their whatever this drug testing policy is, there's just a lot going on with Orgeron, and they've got Scott Wilber, the athletic director, has a laundry list of stuff he's probably working through right now.
What was funny is whenever Sankey got asked about it, he's like, usually this would like check the boxes. I'm used to Ross Dellinger asking me about the alcohol question, yeah. Which
anybody follows Ross Dellinger on Twitter would get that. Yeah.
But either way, I think what's most important here, though, Kentucky fans, if you're looking for not a silver lining, but the rest of the story, the rest of the story is Dare Rosenthal's coming to Kentucky, and he's not going to be a problem in the locker room. Like that is clear and evident that that guy was well liked down there.
Yeah,
and he's also obviously has the talent to
first get round talent there. Was the words Orgeron used today.
Yeah, and Deculus, who's going to he could play in 60 career games at LSU. He's one of those COVID super senior. Mm-hmm. And he said that he's one of those futuristic types of offensive linemen. That was the way he described him because he's such a great athlete. Mm-hmm. So Kentucky's got a good one there, and a reason to get excited. It's going to be weird, though, being at Media Days tomorrow, and we saw the posters that came out today. Kentucky's offensive poster had more offensive linemen than any other position group. Offensive line and tight ends.
They know where their bread is buttered, man.
Yeah.
And Dan Mullen, who was first, had an interesting quote regarding that. We'll get to that in a little bit. But Kentucky, they're leaning into that offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've got Goodwin in the fold. Ryan Bayer, that recruitment's looking a little iffy right now. But Emil Wagner's still out there. I mean, they could get two top 100 tackles in this class. Plus Grant Bingham, who's going to slide inside the guard. They're really leaning in hard to that offensive line, the strength of the team. And how can you blame them?
It's
going to be a huge part of what they do this year, and it's just another point of the season. How does that help a new offensive coordinator and whatnot? But yeah, not surprised to see the media guy go all in on the offensive line.
I also appreciate that the new trend among offensive linemen, just nationwide, is let's grow our hair long. Deculus had it, and Kennard's got it. The hair past the shoulders just makes an enormous human look even more enormous. Maybe it's because it's like, it's kind of a caveman-esque look. I don't know what it is, but I think it makes him look even bigger, and I'm here for it. Actually, kind of, is it weird if I ask Kennard what kind of product he puts in his hair?
I don't know. I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know anything about hair products, so.
Me. I get it now.
This is just some hair envy over here. Let's talk about Dan Mullen. What a piece of work that guy is.
He thinks the shoes are so cool. Like, he thinks he's so cool, like, wearing the Jordans.
And you can tell that he is such a poser. Because he did the whole Star Wars Darth Vader thing last year. Then today he got asked what his favorite Star Wars movie was. And he couldn't name one.
Totally played it off.
Like, he was like, oh, you know, you can go so many different routes. There's so many good ones. It's like, dude, this is the easiest question ever. Just say Empire. Like, but I don't know if he actually, I think if you held his feet to the fire, I don't know if he could actually name the title of a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
I mean, and he could maybe tell you what his shoes are on the day of. That's his signature go-to. Whatever. Mullen, he's such a tryhard. That's what it is. He's a tryhard, and that's what I think annoys the bejesus out of me. Do you have the quote that he had today in the local media scrum?
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, Dan Mullen. Like,
well, this quote that came out, as soon as we saw it, it was right before he even took the stage, because it came, right, like you just said, it just came from the local media, and you mentioned poser and try hard. And as soon as I saw this, I told you, he wants to be Spurrier so bad.
I mean, yeah, that was your exact words.
Dan Mullen, this is from Edgar Thompson, who covers the Gators for a newspaper in Florida. Dan Mullen at SEC Media Days on Georgia being the team to beat in the SEC East. Didn't they say that last year? And turns out Florida was picked to win the East this year in the preseason. He's a goober. There's no real getting around that. It just is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
We heard whispers from some Mississippi State people that today that he's not the best guy to work with.
Yeah. There were not any glowing reviews of his what's the word I'm looking for? It sounded like he was kind of a jerk in the building.
Yeah, his tenure in Starkville wasn't the easiest guy to work with, which, coming from the Urban Meyer tree, that's not too terribly shocking.
I also appreciate that the way that he and his players kind of finessed any sort of critiques was...
Yeah.
Especially recruiting. Like, hey, Alabama's getting more players from Florida than any other school. And what's your kind of... How do you change that? And it was just... Well, we got to keep them home because in the state of Florida, they make the bet. And then he did his, you know, kind of
facilities, sales pitch.
Yeah.
My thing with it is, and I told you this today before the thing got started, like he hasn't spent the coaching staff equity, the pool of money he has to delegate responsibilities. He just hasn't gone out and gotten recruiters like that. So they're just not gonna compete against those guys down there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to have a class and average star rating. It's going to be somewhere between 10 and 13. And if they don't get a generational quarterback, this is just what they're going to be. But that the recruiting one was one. But to me, the more was the defensive criticism. Like, he didn't say, like, I fully believe in my defense. He kind of bounced around the question.
Right.
And then the Emory Jones stuff.
Dude, they would not – I mean, it's almost like...
I mean, I asked, every player got asked, and you could tell that they had been, like...
Prepped
for
that. Oh, yeah.
Mullen got asked a couple times, and he would not say, like...
He even did the thing where he was like, well, I've had a lot of different kinds of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And he, like, named off
right.
all throughout his 20-year coaching career, you know? We had Tebow's, and we had this kind. Here's my theory, Luckett. If Emory Jones was as good as he was billed as a recruit, he would have played over Kyle Trask.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's that good. And you know what I'm worried about? I'm worried that he's going to get hurt against Kentucky and the backup's going to come in and be the hero. Like, is that bad that, like, the Kentucky fan in me is already worried about Florida's backup quarterback?
Yeah, that backup is a Nick Fitzgerald clone.
Oh, so he sucks too.
I mean, he's going to, like, if they want to run power, you're not going to stop him from getting 4 yards. But, like, he's probably got more arm talent than Fitzgerald, but he's got some concerns when it comes to throwing the football.
But you see where I'm coming from, though, is, like, a lot of the early hype you get on Florida is based on, well, Dan Mullen's good with quarterback.
Benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, it's Georgia's division, and Florida's just going to be second fiddled. Like, they've already penciled them into that, and I just don't think that's necessarily the case.
Well, this is the year where that changes, Nick. I think they've gone to 3 New Year's Six Bowls, so I think that's the thought process there. But, you're right. Like, I've always thought Florida's closer to Kentucky than they are Georgia, even when they beat Georgia last year.
Yeah.
Just because the talent that Georgia gets is just, I mean, it's just, it's a tier, a good tier above what Florida's getting right now.
It's a lot, and significantly.
And I think it says a lot about Mullen as an in-game coach that he's been able to get Florida where they are right now. Like, he's done a really good job to get them to 29-9 over the last 3 years, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And they were 29-6 before that three-game losing streak to end the season. But they have a hard ceiling with him right now, and I think they're just hitting their head on it.
Right.
And eventually, when you hit the hard, you're not going to keep hitting the hard ceiling. Either you're going to break it or you're going to start regressing.
Right.
And so I think we could see some of the regression. I've compared them to Penn State. I think you compare them to Michigan, too, where there's only so high you can get up, and you're not going to stay there over time. You're gonna have dips. You know what I'm saying? So if you're reaching your ceiling right now, which it seemed like their ceiling's 9-3, fringe top 10, then what's the down year?
What's the floor?
Is it 7-5? Can you maintain 8-4? Do you have a 6-6 in there if a bunch of stuff goes wrong? Is this the year it happens? I mean, it could. I wrote today, we're doing some roundups on the site of all of Kentucky's opponents. And my thing at the end with Florida is, it's fair to expectation to think they're going to be the second best team in the SEC East, that they should go 9-3. But I think at the same time, you have to say this could be the worst team in Dan Mullen's tenure in Gainesville.
Yeah.
And so if that's true, you could just see the season going a bad way, especially when you draw Bama and LSU out of the West. You got to go to LSU.
Right, right. And the schedule, if you're looking at it, it's front loaded with a lot of home games.
The non-conference is manageable. I mean, you got Florida State at the end, but all those games are going to be double-digit favorites.
Their first road game is at Kentucky, but you have Alabama in week 3, which, you know, that's no cupcake. But maybe Kentucky is what gets them bursting at the seams, because they travel at they host Vanderbilt the following week, but then travel to LSU, have a bye, and then it's the cocktail party. That could be a couple of losses. Missouri, you don't know what that's going to be like towards the end of the year. So, I would love to see things. We saw the wheels really rattle towards the end of the year, but I think a lot of folks are willing to excuse it because of the opt-outs they had. Nevertheless, love watching Dan Mullen just squirm. Back to stadium, get the hell out of here, Dan Mullen.
Did you find the Jeffrey Simmons thing weird?
That was really weird. Why did Sankey bring that up?
I don't know.
Did they want it to be a talking point? Like, maybe the fact that he's... Well, and what was also weird about Sankey bringing up Jeffrey Simmons as he was coming to the podium is that, like, it was almost like he was saying, yeah, he's done good, but we also aren't talking about the bad stuff either.
Before I say, I need to educate myself on that, what exactly that was.
There was a video of him hitting a woman or something like that.
Yeah, but there was like, he shouldn't have done it, but there was like an exclamation for it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Am I remembering that correctly?
Like, hit his car or something. Like, there was something.
Or hit his sister or something like that.
Yeah, there was something to it. But it's been so long that I forget.
And he has moved on. Like, he's, by all accounts, he's a stud of a football player, and he's not gotten any trouble since. He's a good player for the Titans now. But that was just why would you bring that up? I thought that was odd.
Yeah, it was odd. But speaking of Greg Sankey, the Stanky Lake himself, he had his long intro today, and he did not quote Bruce Springsteen, but he got the next best thing with Bob Dylan.
If you quote Springsteen, that's like a sports writer's dream. I don't know why, but every sports writer. I'm not one of them, but every sports writer like seems like they have like they grew up with Bruce Springsteen posters in their room.
Oh yeah, yeah. Same, Bruce Springsteen. It's because he grew up wearing sports reporter pajamas as well. So the feeling is mutual. The two love one another. But Sankey went a little bit different and quoted like the one Bob Dylan song that everybody knows, and it might be the easiest cliche in the history of music cliches, and that Sankey saying the times they are a changing. And man, did that. It was just so. What made it even worse is, since Sankey is the commissioner, it was like he planned a PowerPoint, too, where they had this big screen behind him and they could pull up stuff as he was talking. So they brought up the Bob Dylan lyrics.
Have they done that before?
Behind him? No, that's new. And it was so just, it felt so corny. It was just so corny. Like, we get it. The time, like, this was the first time in a long time that I can remember a commissioner's remarks actually having, carrying so much weight and significance because, I mean, we just had Mark Emmert saying earlier this week that we need to decentralize things and give conference commissioners more power. And this was also Sankey's opportunity to kind of take a victory lap. I mean, that was Ross Dellinger's column this morning was kind of like, hey, all of you people who didn't want to play football, take out your suckets and suck it. Because Sankey stood firm. He did not panic. I think that was the direct quote was, the SEC never panicked.
Yes.
And they continued to play. So in addition to the usual bragging that Sankey does at the podium, there also was a, we want to be the leaders in things moving forward. Except also Congress, you need to pass the nil law, not us.
To me, like, the takeaway was just, it was just a lot to unpack.
It was.
It was a lot. Like, it overwhelmed me how much, like, was thrown at us during that press conference. You had the first off, the COVID stuff.
That was probably the most newsworthy thing was, hey, if you don't have enough players to play and you've got a forfeit, we're not rescheduling.
80% of the roster.
Yeah. We're not rescheduling and we're not having any sort of no contest, like it will be a forfeit. Now, that's not official yet. The university's got to prove that, those administrators. But that's kind of the plan moving forward this fall, is that if you don't have it, it's your own damn fault, because right now only 6 of 14 teams have 80% of their team vaccinated.
Kentucky is not one of them.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think somebody, I think Josh Moore reported that today.
Okay.
I saw Tyler tweet that out.
Gotcha.
Per Josh Moore of the Herald Leader. But yeah, I mean, he went in on the Disney deal. Starts in 2024.
It's going to be nice knowing the game times.
Game time's a little bit more advanced. It's more fan-friendly. I think that's a smart move.
Yeah, like being able to like, oh, I can go to a road trip in Athens and only have to book one night. Or maybe not Athens, but like Tennessee or Nashville. Those are close, like, day trips. You can know months ahead, do I need a hotel for Friday or Saturday?
Right, save yourself some cheddar.
Yeah, makes a lot of
sense. Instead of having to book it.
Or cancel or whatever. But it's just, I think it's kind of short notice that 2 Mondays before a game is when you're finding out kickoff time. But nevertheless.
He talked about the portal and how many, you know, there's 1,100 players still in it. We need to improve flexibility. And what he's saying there is the 25 hard cap scholarship rule in college football. That if you take a, like Tennessee lost 30 scholarship players pretty much to the transfer portal. But they're only allowed to bring in 25 hard cap every year.
Mm-hmm.
So then it creates a situation because any portal, any guy you bring in from outside, like they brought Joe Milton from Michigan, that counts against their 25 scholarship limit for that recruiting class.
Mm-hmm.
And so coaches that are losing a lot of guys in the portal,
they want to, every time you lose one, you should be able to get one.
I don't know if it's that per se, but there should be some wiggle room there. Like we should get more. Because if you don't, then in 2 or 3 years, you're stuck in a situation. Like, Tennessee's facing a situation where over the next 3 years, they're going to average somewhere between 65 and 72 scholarship players. It's going to be like, it's like self-inflicted probation, almost. And so the NCAA, it went to the Board of Governors and it didn't pass. So that's, a lot of college football coaches are pretty pissy about that right now.
Right,
they
want
to get that passed. So that's really what he was talking about there. And then just the NCAA in general.
But to that portal point, though, it was 1,100 out of 1,600 entries just hadn't found a new home. And that's the grass is greener, people. Like, it's true. And that was one of the side effects. So we actually now have some hard and fast evidence because it's been long enough. I mean, it's only a year. And obviously, I think this could just be the early phenomenon of it where everybody's kind of just jumping at opportunities as quickly as possible. Like, they just always think it's going to be better. But this was always going to be a side effect. Like, just because you were recruited by a bunch of schools out of high school doesn't mean they want you once they've seen you out of college.
It's part of the just player empowerment era. If you want to have agency, that's just going to be that's part of the deal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You're learning your worth the hard way.
Right.
In a lot of these instances. So
as time goes on, kids are going to get more educated about that. because a lot of the people around them, close to them, are going to get educated because they're going to see what's happening now.
Right.
And so that all is going to figure out itself. He said it's easy to criticize the NCAA, but he went on to say like adaptation is needed or right. adaption is needed. Basically, the point of that was, like you said, the commissioner should have more power. It's not fair to not give more scholar, like baseball only gets 11.7 scholarships and other random sports. It's not fair that the SEC
that can afford to give more scholarships.
Right. It's not fair that the SEC is treated the same as Winthrop.
Yeah, no. And that was the point of Emmer's comments. But I also think that it was, I mean, folks, not everybody in this business is bright. You know, we latch on to talking points. We do. It's easy. It's all hanging fruit. So somebody went back to the well of breaking off with the Power Five. Sankey was like, no, let me be clear. Like, this is not us breaking off. It's just maybe he didn't say operating more autonomously, but he also describes the Power Five as the autonomous five or something. Like, that's what they refer to themselves as. So, which is just a weird ass name. Like, we can begin with that. But that in general, it just
they're the big wig or conference commissioners are pissed off about what happened last year. Like, Emmert just...
Yeah, he said, you all deal with it.
Yeah, he just threw his hands and said, you all take it. And then he just got an extension. And so they're mad because, really, they just want a new commissioner. Like, they want somebody to come in that'll, I think, give them more leeway and will listen to them more.
Yeah.
Instead, they feel like they're doing his job for him. I think that's what I'm kind of taking away from these comments. And he was really... Sankey was really kind of going after him, which is kind of crazy because that was his background, was NCAA sanctions. Man. And he mentioned the sanctions, like,
which, that was
the Central District of New York. And, the you know, we're talking about
LSU, know, Will Wade.
Hooker Gate with Louisville.
Oh, Mangus was quick to bring that up because Sankey was a part of the we're going to crack down, but now that's kind of moved away from that. And I think the words he was like, fair and timely. We want these. They should still be processed, but it still needs to be fair and timely. But it's like, I mean, that was 4 years ago with Hooker Gate. No, it wasn't Hooker Gate. It was Brian Bowen Gate. I get all of my Louisville scandals mixed up. It's easy to confuse them.
But these schools are worse off just being hurt over the long run. Just give them the punishment so they can just move on.
Yeah.
They've got a cloud over them, and they just can't escape it. It's going on a half decade now.
Yeah.
Like, just make a damn decision and let's go. And so, it was really a shot at Emmert. A lot of this was kind of going after him.
Yeah.
There was just a lot there.
Oh, from he Sankey also today. Like when talking about the changes. A big emphasis was like, we're going to change, but we've got to keep Olympic sports intact. I know there's a lot of folks out there that were happy to hear that because not only are they involved in those sports, but as he put it plainly, I think 80% of all Olympic athletes spent time in college.
Yeah.
It's a developing ground. Like, a lot of people, you know.
That's what he was saying. You can't have the Olympic model we have without college sports.
Yeah, because, like, not all of our athletes go pro in something other than sports. But most of our Olympic athletes go pro in Olympic stuff after going to college. So, it was one of those things where it was like, oh, gosh, I want to hit the high points. But there was a lot. There was a lot to unpack. And I think the one thing that I will at least, I do appreciate not only the candor in that Sankey can be buttoned up as well as buttoned down, you know, like he can make his Ross Dellinger jokes, but he can also like be very measured in his remarks and choose his words carefully. So, he at least showed last year that...
He's done a great job. There's no getting around that since he took
over. Yeah, they're really... He has. And you got to commend him for it. So, I don't know where it's going, but I'm at least more confident now that he's one of those leading the charge now that Emmert's, like, taking a step back. And what it's going to do is it's going to end up benefiting Kentucky in the big picture of things.
Yeah, SEC in general, for sure. Yeah. They're in a great spot as they should be as the prominent conference in college athletics.
look at, I'm curious, out of all of the things we saw today, so we talked about what we, who we heard from and whatnot, was there any anything on, you know, maybe Radio Row, maybe at the Winfrey Hotel, that kind of maybe threw you off guard a little bit, that you weren't expecting at your first SEC media days?
I mean, we're not expecting a full-fledged mall.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's just a big-ass mall.
Yeah, like the hotel is literally attached to a mall. You can walk from the hotel into a mall.
Yeah, the food court right downstairs. Maybe we get some Great American Cookie Company.
Oh, I saw that today.
Yeah.
It caught my eye. Mullen had an interesting, he had a couple interesting things about schedule.
Oh, yeah, that was a good talking point.
he doesn't like the permanent
crossover.
And I looked at Nick and I said, well, of course he doesn't like it. He's going to play LSU every year.
Yeah, like Kentucky, they probably like the permanent crossover.
And so he said that, and he said, you know, I wish we didn't do that. And then he said, if we went to 9, I would like, because I might ask Kirby about this tomorrow if no one else does. The comments where he had about, you know, the Jacksonville game.
Oh, the neutral site game. Yeah. Well, when your only road game is a neutral site game, or what was it?
He said you play 4 home, 4 away, and then you would play 1 neutral site. He says, I have no idea how they would do it, but I think that'd be a good. And really what he was saying there was like, if everybody does it, then Georgia has to do it kind of thing. They don't have a choice, and then you can't complain about not having the recruiting week there. But that's like a big. There wasn't media days last year, so it wasn't really talked about. But 2019, that was a huge thing back then.
Especially because they didn't have a contract to play the game in Jacksonville there for a while.
So we would have to get Kirby Smart's comments on that. And I was trying to think from Kentucky's aspect. Like, first off, it's a terrible idea.
Oh, yeah. Four home,
away. We need more home games. We don't need neutral sites.
Oh, yeah.
It's a terrible idea. But if it did happen, like, who would Kentucky do it with? I mean, Missouri and Indianapolis, that was kind of my thinking.
St. Louis would be bad.
Because Tennessee would make sense for them to play Alabama in, like, Legion Field in Birmingham and then play them in Nashville or something like that.
Yeah.
Texas A&M and Arkansas already do it.
Kentucky, Missouri, you would play one in Louisville and one in St. Louis. Because those are both kind of like the Fayetteville.
Yeah, that would make sense. But that was the Kentucky one I came up with. Like, South Carolina, like, would they play just, you know, they couldn't play Georgia, so, like, who would they play? Would they play Tennessee and Charlotte?
So, I was thinking, because A&M is their crossover, that, like, maybe A&M plays in Houston.
A&M already has one, though, with Arkansas. They play in Dallas, Arlington.
Yeah.
It'd be hard. That maybe be a project to figure that out. But, yeah, those were interesting comments from Mullen.
Man, what a try hard.
So tomorrow, Nick, we go into Tuesday.
Yep, we got Kentucky on the schedule.
Kentucky's early afternoon, Lane Kiffin late afternoon.
So Kirby Smart will kick things off. He'll be very boring. Probably most underrated boring guy. At least he's like Malzahn was, but Kirby at least has a little bit of spunk to his talk. So it at least sounds kind of like, okay, Josh Heupel, my God, that guy. He's going to be a real piece of work. I don't even know what he's going to be selling either, but...
Yeah, I wrote about it in one of our primers on KSR about, like, this is kind of same way for Beamer. This is kind of his first time getting national attention. And obviously Tennessee's a bigger brand than South Carolina, but he really needs to sell the program and get some positivity around them, because there's really no positivity right now. With all the transfer portal stuff, NCAA cloud looming.
Like, yeah, but see, like, seriously, what
they're
is
not
your,
recruiting well?
What puts butts in seats at Neyland Stadium? I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, it's just, I mean, tradition. I mean, that's really
and
the only
air raid
thing.
We're gonna move the ball.
Yeah,
so.
You had an interesting point when you went on with SEC Mike on his podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Tennessee-Kentucky thing is it's like an inverse of 1998-1997. Kentucky's now the proven program that's stout in the line of scrimmage, keeps producing running backs, leads the league in rushing, where Tennessee is running like this, or they're just going all in on this all-out, spread it out,
throw it deep
offense. Like, you can consider it kind of gimmicky, like when Heupel was faced – good defenses, they've been able to kind of shut it down a little bit in some spots. So, yeah, I thought that was very, very interesting when I heard you bring that up. But, yeah, I think the big thing for him is going to be selling that offense. We're going to score points, yada, yada, yada. But the he's going to get a lot of portal questions. Be interested in how he answers that and how he goes all about that.
Yeah, and we got – when Kentucky comes up, I know that at least with amongst local media, it'll be the first time Stoops has talked since Dan Brezowitz was arrested. I'm sure it will be a very blasé kind of response, but that will certainly be news.
Handling internally, probably what it'll be.
Right, right. And I'm sure there might be some general questions about having multiple coaches arrested in the offseason, but I don't know how much that reverberates elsewhere. I don't think Pete Thamel is going to be, you know, trying to pull a gotcha on Stoops. But I'm also curious, too. I mean, it feels like every year we get the reoccurring, we don't get enough respect kind of card. I don't know. I don't know if that's something that happens again, because you would think that a lot of it's going to be talking about the offense and kind of what we've.
What are the like the national regional media? What are the questions they're asking Stoops?
You know, how do you break through that glass to get to the top? That you've been in that middle.
To me, it's why Liam Cohen and why this new offense.
Right.
To me, it's like why have you all struggled so much in the passing game? Transfer portal. How have you been able to do so well in the transfer portal? And then just, you know, probably hit longevity. How does it feel to be the second longest tenure coach in SEC?
Yeah, that's going to be a nice soft toss at the beginning. But, yeah. And the thing that's also going to be, like, so Peter Burns shared a story about just how ticked off Stoops was at 18 media days. We're going to be a damn good team. I hope there's, like, an anecdote about that. Like, that... Because if you get fiery Stoops during talking season, then you know he's got something good. So hopefully that's the case. But they've kept a lot of things a mystery, particularly offensively. That's what we want to know. And I don't know how much he's going to be willing to give tomorrow. How much kind of newsy things and how good is his bad joke going to be? Because he's always got one. Yes. He's always got one bad joke and it... You know,
I always wonder if he like comes up with that days before, if he just sits on the plane and tries to think of one.
I'm sure it's not in Tony Neely's prep before. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure that's not part of it. But we're gonna be there for it all. If you aren't following along on Kentucky Sports Radio's Instagram or the Facebook page, the stories, images, everything behind the scenes from Media Days, we'll be recording live in personnel throughout the week. We got a lot more to. I'm really excited too. Subscribe to the KSR YouTube page. Some of these conversations with media folks, I think you all will find enlightening. And we're going to help you get to know Kentucky's opponents. This is the time of the year that I get to know a lot of them too, get more well acquainted with them. So, exciting time to kick talking season off down here in Hoover.
Day one complete. Got to get some dinner now. But one down, three to go.
Yep, one down. Three to go. We appreciate y'all hanging out with us down here in Hoover. We'll be back before you know it. And until then, go Cats and go Kroger.